Raised Rowdy.
All right, guys, welcome back to the Raised Rowdy podcast. I am Nikki T.
My name is Kurt Ozon.
And we have our special guest this week, Mr. Zach John King.
What's up?
Dude, thanks so much for being here. Yeah. Maybe in a storm, we shall see.
We'll see. If it starts rattling, we'll know why.
Hey, that would make good content if the roof caves in during the pod.
I don't know if it would or not.
Might be the end of it.
Yeah. We're going to hope that it doesn't. But as I said, man, thanks for being here. It's been super cool to watch everything happened that has happened for you since we first like kind of got to meet you. So I think the first event you played for us was out here at the Rusty Nail in Hermitage.
Yes, sir.
Which is so funny. We were just there last night for Rhythm and Smoke, which got rained out outside and moved inside. And, you know, the sound is the sound at the Rusty Nail.
It is. Like, it is.
It is sound there.
It is. You do hear it.
Yeah.
You know?
Ideally.
We said, I told sure. Kurt, I was like, the Rusty Nail was extra rusty last night.
Yeah, I love that. I love that.
It was fun though, man. Heck but yeah. It's been, I mean, you were too big to play there for us, but we thank you for doing it back then.
Thank you for having me.
You were, dude. Even when you got to town, there was like a buzz about you. Like people knew that you were freaking great, and you were.
Thank you.
So it's cool to see like you kind of build your team out and,
yeah,
you know, find the folks that believe in you as much as you believe in them and get to do the dang thing.
Yeah, we're trying. We're trying.
Well, I remember back then hearing the songs and even through the you of the beautiful lights at the Rusty Nail and the sound system, you could kind of hear it like set apart.
Yeah.
You know? Your voice is super cool. And your tunes are amazing, man.
Thanks, man.
We were kind of previewing the EP that that we got a little bit of an early listen
Heck
to.
Yeah. Good.
It's like all smash singles.
Yes.
The whole EP. Smashes, bro. Absolutely.
Yeah,
I was telling Nick, it's like I could hear the crowd already singing the songs.
That's the goal, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, we worked really hard to pick. You know, we wanted like a balance, right?
Yeah.
We didn't want it to just be a hodgepodge.
Yeah.
But we also were like, yeah, it needs to be unskippable.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But also telling a complete story of who I am. And I feel like we kind of hit both. Like if you listen track 1 through 6, you should know who I am by the end of it.
Yep.
But it doesn't mean there has to be boring songs on there. You know
Absolutely.
What I'm saying?
Yeah.
Man, I talk about this all the time. Like I want an album or a EP or whatever where I could hear myself listening to one of those songs over and over and over again 100 times, and then I go to the next song and I listen to it over and over and over 100 times. Like that's the kind of listener I am, and you have that with this.
Thank you, man. We worked really hard to get there, so I appreciate that.
Yeah, it's sick. Means the world. Who's like been doing your production?
Yeah, so Ryan Wilson.
Yeah,
he's been my buddy literally since I was in an indie rock band in Athens, Georgia. Sick. He lived in Griffin, Georgia, and he had a little studio, and my band started recording with him, and then I moved here. And I'm like, I don't know if I want to do the Nashville production thing.
Yeah.
I don't know if I want to sound like Nashville yet.
Right.
And so I called him up and he was like, yeah, we'll do it together. And so we've been doing it literally Sick. Since day one. And I mean, it's been so fun. Now I'm co-producing this newer stuff, not the EP stuff, but we got some new stuff.
Yeah.
But he's just like, at this point, we've worked together so long. He speaks my language and I speak his, and we do everything ourselves.
So cool.
My band tracks the records.
Sick,
so it's just a blast, and we think that like by doing that we're getting something a little different.
You are.
It sounds a little different than the rest of town.
Yeah, you know? It absolutely does, and that's like one of the things we talk about is like how do you stand out in the crowd? Looks one of them, vibes one of them, what you curate and how you kind of do your social media, of course, is important, but the music's the most important.
It is,
right? Like standing out sonically in a weirdly wild field of country music with more artists crossing over than ever, you know, more songs being put out than ever by artists that are putting out music, it becomes challenging. And I think you freaking hit the nail on the head with this, brother.
Thanks, man.
Absolutely.
Yeah. The Rusty Nail.
There you
the
go.
Old Rusty
Tying
Nail.
It all back in. Let's go.
So you, by you taking off and moving to Nashville, Ryan moved to town too, I assume, right?
He actually he lives in Atlanta. And he'll come up now. He comes up to Nashville. But the first few projects, like, we were doing at his studio still.
So you would go back home to Georgia to cut stuff?
I'd go back to Georgia, cut stuff with my boys, and it took a lot longer. Because, you know, at the time, like, we didn't know what we were doing. We weren't session guys.
Yeah.
So it was a long, arduous process, and now we've got it pretty locked. We have one utility guy come in now.
Who's that? Because they're still on the record.
Yeah, Johnny. I need to remember his last name, but he's been incredible. He plays everything. So if we need a banjo, if we need a pedal steel, if we need a B3,
that's the guy.
He's like our utility guy. And so what it does for my guys is it allows them to do their thing.
Yeah.
And then he can cover the rest of the bases.
That's nice.
It's been our best way and the most efficient way without compromising the sound.
Yeah. And is he a Nashville guy or is he a Georgia guy?
My producer.
No, this guy, Johnny.
Johnny's here in Nashville.
Oh, cool. So you drive him over to Atlanta or whatever?
Now we come, Ryan will come here and we record at Nome.
Okay.
And then we'll just call whatever utility guy we want and we have him for the day. And that's then sick. My guys come in and it's been really fun.
That's sick.
Yeah.
I remember talking to like Charles Wesley Godwin and his producer Al and be like, so when are you guys moving to town? And they're like, what?
Never.
They're like, why would, Al's like, I live in this house and there's a studio in it and it's a huge, nice studio. Mm-hmm. He's like, why would I move to Nashville and pay rent? And I was like, oh yeah, why would you? So it's cool that your buddy's still living in Atlanta. And it's, you're also like different because you're from a different place and you're not drinking coffee with and talking production with all the same folks all the time.
Yeah, and there's nothing wrong with that. Like I think some of, if not the best music is produced in Nashville by Nashville producers. I think it's incredible. I think if it was just for us, it was like carving that lane early.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And right now what that looks like for me is using people that, you know, nobody else is using.
Yeah.
And so it's been a blast.
That's sick.
Yeah.
Are some of the guys from your band, some of the guys from when you were doing the indie stuff, or is it
not anymore? Band? No, but that's been fun. We all met through that, you know, process of like, I was trying to pick, we're back in Griffin, Georgia.
Yeah.
It's like, well, who plays in Griffin, Georgia?
Yeah.
And you just find people and you get to know them. And then, time came to pick a band for these shows that kept popping up. And I was like, well, you know, Sam tracked on bass for the record. Let me call Sam. Mm-hmm. And it just grew to where now it's like, we don't have to learn parts.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of times you get Bukovac playing a ridiculous guitar part and your band has to learn it, but my band makes all the parts. So, like, our live show is exactly what the record is, which super is really cool. fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm proud of that.
That's super cool.
Yeah.
I don't know if I don't think I've seen you full band.
Ooh, we'll get there. We have a show coming up in the fall with Dylan Scott at the Pinnacle.
Hell yeah.
So that should be a blast.
I got to go there. We were supposed to go for the Gavin show, but we had a wedding the day that we bought tickets for because we're idiots and we just bought tickets. Thinking, oh, yeah, we don't have anything going on. And then we got the invitation mail, and I'm like, damn. I was happy to go to the wedding.
But those shows look sick, though.
They look sick.
Yeah.
Pinnacle's a great venue.
I've heard nothing but great things. I haven't been there yet.
And if, like, you're given, like, a backstage pass or whatever, they have, like, these cubbies that are, like, above the stage.
Mm.
It's not like a cubby. It's, like, a nice room so you can watch and listen side stage, and there's a bathroom, and there's a bar.
Oh, that's incredible.
So all your VIPs are taken care of.
I love that.
That's really cool.
It's sick.
We're trying to get all my family to either come. We're playing the Roxy in Atlanta or the Pinnacle. It's like the same weekend.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to get all my family to either come to Nashville or Atlanta.
One or the other.
Because a lot of my family hadn't seen me live either.
It's so crazy.
Because we just started playing shows.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, we'll just have them go to the Georgia show and Nick and I will come to Nashville.
Deal.
But drink all the beers in the VIP section.
I got y'all. Come on. Let's do it.
Oh, man.
No, it's like, it's crazy too, like the Nashville shows, because it's like everybody's in town. Brutal. Everybody wants to
New York, LA, yeah.
So we understand that that's not how it always works. You know?
Sure. I got you.
Got to take care of the family, man.
Absolutely.
Amen.
But dude, it's been super cool. And honestly, and Matt will probably tell you this, and Kurt might too, because I have this thing where I'll listen to a song over and over and over. And for me, Wanna Be Cowboy was that song for a while.
Thanks, man.
Like, it really was. I just, being a dude that I was like, I did not grow up in the country. I grew up a little bit white trash.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And like, so the lyrics hit home and the melody is fantastic. And it just feels so relatable to kind of like how I grew up. Like, I drove an 87 Buick Skyhawk that was spray paint black. You know, I didn't drive a pickup truck.
Sure,
you know?
Sure.
So it's like, it sounds like kind of like I feel attached to that story as much as anybody does, you know?
Yeah, we've made, that's kind of why we've made it the brand right now. You know, I love that song. It was one of the first songs I ever wrote in town.
So good.
But we made it the brand because it was the truest thing for me. Like, so my grandparents lived out in Albuquerque, New Mexico.
Yeah.
I was just there 2 days ago.
It's beautiful.
It's crazy.
It's an interesting place because there's not much to do out there.
So unique, yeah.
But they were cowboys in all intents and purposes. Like, my favorite picture of my granddad is a Polaroid of him and his Stetson by the Grand Canyon. And like, this is his flannel, actually. That was not planned. And crazy. It's like, I think the picture's like in the flannel. And basically, I have that in my blood, but then also I've got this part of me that like has nothing to do with that.
Yeah.
Grew up in a cul-de-sac in South Georgia.
Yeah.
I think I've ridden a horse like 4 or 5 times,
yeah.
You know? And so I was like, I feel 50-50 and I can't lie about it. I think that's the thing when people come into Nashville, it's tempting to want to like put this persona on as a cowboy because they're the coolest, right?
Yeah.
But I was like, yeah, we got to shoot it straight. It's been cool to see people react to it because it does feel genuine, and it's really fun to see people like identify themselves with it.
Yeah.
Because a lot of people feel that way, I feel like.
I think so too, man. It's like cowboy culture is cool again, which is awesome.
Absolutely.
But it's not everybody's a cowboy.
No.
You know, no. Which is awesome too.
Yeah. I do a lot of photo shoots and stuff, and it's like, I get a lot of like, give me like the Marlboro Man look, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, okay, cool.
Yeah. The beard suits it well, too.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, like, as a photographer, I shoot photos also.
Oh, I got you.
Like,
shoot artist
photos, yeah. It's back, man.
Yep.
But it's like, I was a rock guy growing up, so I didn't know what a steel guitar was until, I mean, now I play one professionally.
Yeah.
But it's like, hearing the song, it's like, yes, why? It's one of those things, like, I hear a song, I'm like, why didn't I write that, you know?
Yeah. Well, for me, it's like, I grew up, my grandparents had this little radio on their cabinet. And they would only listen to country music, and my grandma would sing and whistle when she cooked. And all I remember, like, from the earliest song was, like, Patsy Cline. I heard Crazy at the kitchen sink, and I was like, what is that? So you grow up on country music, and then you get to high school, and I was like, country music's my grandparents' music.
Yeah.
Like, screw that. And I'd run as far away from it as I can and fall in love with anything indie rock. I mean, like, anything. Radiohead, Strokes, Kings of Leon, you know, you name it. And now I've kind of... I fell back in love with where I came from, like a lot of people do, and you start kind of taking both of those passions and mixing them together, and now I think it's a really cool time in country because you can do that.
Yeah, you can carve your own lane.
Yeah.
And there is a wide enough lane that all of it can exist and have so much success, which is super cool.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's a... I mean, I love the stuff that kind of sounds crossover to like indie or folk.
Yeah.
Like, I've been, like, we had Max McNown on the podcast, and I love his stuff, and, like, Cameron Whitcomb, like, I love that lane, that's almost, like, Lumineers-y, you know what I mean?
Absolutely.
And I hear, like, a smidge of that in, like, what 100. You're doing,
You know? I mean, like, we have banjo in every single song I write, we have pedal steel in every single song I write, I think those are the two most perfect instruments in the world.
Yeah.
But then we've got, like, we play a Jaguar instead of a Tele in some of our songs, which is a very indie rock thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
So we're trying to take both of those, and it's fun as we continue to record, finding that identity and like stamping it even harder in these new songs where people are like, oh, I get it now.
Yeah.
And it takes a little time. When you first start recording, you're chasing something, and now we've got this like thing.
And it takes no time to like get infected by it when you listen
100.
To it.
100, yeah.
I hear it go, yep. I told him, this is a fucking smash.
Yeah. Come on.
Whiskey sip, and I'm like, yes, let's go.
I love it.
Like, yeah, he's like, I can already hear the crowd saying this back.
And it's like the gang vocals in the chorus. You don't hear a lot of gang vocals like that. Mm-mm. You know, it's like so sick.
I pulled that from the early Sam Hunt records.
Yeah.
Had so all good. Of these stacked gang vocals on the harmonies.
Yeah.
And it sounded so good.
So
and I was
good.
Like, well, why don't we do that again? So
Yeah. Dude, I love those, especially that like Between the Pines EP that he put out kind of like before the record.
Yeah, man.
Like I heard that and I was like, my buddy John saw him open for Chase Rice in Chicago and he was like, look up the Sam Hunt guy. You're going to love it and find out everything about him because he knew who I am as a person. You know, so I was like, all right,
do your digging.
Found out everything I could and just... That EP at that time was free to download from his website. It was like, it wasn't even like streaming. You could like download the folder that had the songs in it.
Oh,
but
so
it was
sick.
So good.
It's unbelievable.
Yeah. And it's just, it's broken down, torn down country with something there.
Yeah.
Something that was different.
Yeah. It was the first, I think the first crack in the door of where we're at now, which is just, you can bring in so many elements that you grew up on.
Yep.
And the beautiful umbrella of country is still there.
Yeah.
Which I think boils down to just good songwriting and storytelling.
Storytelling.
Meaningful lyric storytelling.
Yeah. That's not hard to do.
No.
It's just
Made
it's
for
not
you.
It's not an accent. It's not an instrument. It's it's storytelling. And I think when you get that put into the music, it makes it country.
Yeah, it ain't the banjo or the fiddle, it's the words and what they mean.
Yes.
Yeah. Love it. It's the truth though, man.
It is.
And that's one of the things that for me, being a music fan my whole life, but I grew up with older brothers. I was the youngest of four boys in the house. So each brother had different influences, right? And then my dad listened to country and my mom listened to R&B. So I had all of that playing all throughout the house in different levels of me thinking it was cool or not.
Mm,
you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
But then when I heard Zac Brown's Foundation album in 2009 or whatever year it was, I was like, oh, this is country music?
Yes.
And then I just went down the rabbit hole, you know?
Yep.
So, like, I listened to 90s music in the or in the 90s because I was around. And but I didn't know who sang the songs. Mm-hmm. I knew Chattahoochee, mm-hmm. but I didn't maybe know it was Alan Jackson, mm-hmm. you know. Mm-hmm. So for me, it's always been like the merging. It's funny because when I moved to Nashville, I got more back into rock and roll music.
Yeah.
Because I worked at Big Loud, and they had a rock label, and I started going to those rock shows with, like, the artists that were there, and I was like, damn, I miss this.
Yeah.
You know? I'd been to, like, Queens of the Stone Age. That's, like, one of my all-time favorite bands. Yeah. So, like, I'd see them anytime I could. And, you know, some other rock bands. Indie rock bands, too. Because I had one of my best friends from Pennsylvania listen pretty much exclusively to indie rock.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd go see a bunch of shows like that with him. But it's funny, like, I fell more in love with rock and roll when I moved to the country music capital of the world.
Yeah.
It's interesting.
It is. You know? And it's like, and it's a beautiful time now because all those are mixed together, which is so sick. Mm-hmm. Like, it's amazing.
It's so crazy, man. Just getting to see it and see stuff a little early. Like,
oh, I bet.
Seeing Posty when he started coming to town, and you're like, why the is Post Malone in Nashville? You know, we're here seeing it before he's like putting out country music. And then, you know, stuff like that. You hear people talking about Beyonce looking for cuts and stuff like that. You're like, mm-hmm. what? Mm-hmm. You know, you're like, wow, the world, it is a changing, you know?
It is.
It's crazy.
It is. We're cool again.
Yeah. We're talking a little bit about your live show. You want to kind of guide us through that? Tell us what that's like?
Man. Oh, it's my favorite part of the whole business.
Yeah, of course.
Like, I love songwriting. I love recording. Mm-hmm. Nothing touches my live show. Mm-hmm. For me, it's like simple. It's like, I look at songs like, I finish it, I put it out, and it's like not mine anymore. Mm-hmm. And I know a lot of people are real precious with their songs, and they should be. But for me, I'm just like, get it out. Like, give it to somebody, because that's to me what it's for. So you go from writing in this cubicle mm-hmm. with four people in Nashville, and the only time I get to experience to me what the song actually means is when I get to see it in front of somebody.
Yeah.
So our live shows are the most energy I'll ever give is live. And I think it's a crazy time now because it's so expensive to go to shows.
Yeah.
So I think everybody that comes and pays their hard-earned money to see me needs the absolute best. And so we don't hold anything back, and it's just been a blast. We just really started playing shows this year.
So cool.
And our goal is 100 for the year, and I think we're like already like 55 or 60.
Sick.
So
busy boys.
Yeah, we're trying. Yeah. But we've got we had some Vincent Mason dates, which were incredible. I love him to death.
Yeah.
We got some Gavin Adcock dates in the fall.
Yeah.
Dylan Scott, Connor Smith, Nate Smith. And it's just fun to like hone it in. You know, I don't know what I'm doing.
Hey, dude,
I'm still learning.
That's the thing I'll tell you about everyone in Nashville. The smartest people that you think have the most idea what they're doing are learning as they go.
And I think you should always be.
Yeah.
I think anybody that thinks they got it figured out is probably stalling out a little bit.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, our live shows are just... I got some, like I said, my band cuts my records, and so mm-hmm. what you hear on the record is what you're going to get even better live.
Yeah.
And they're just like the best musicians ever. Sick. I'm so blessed to have them. Yeah.
Well, shout out the guys in the band.
Yeah. Cool. So we got Zach Epps on the guitar. Mm-hmm. We got Bryce Rowell on the guitar. Sam Rady on the bass, who's also playing with Cameron Marlowe.
Oh, cool.
He's incredible.
Oh, yeah.
And Gabe on the drums, and they're just
that's
the best.
That's the squad.
They're the best. And on the records.
Sick.
Yeah man.
Zach John King and the Good Georgia Boys.
The Good Georgia Boys. I love that.
All right, there you go. That's the name.
There's something in the playing Georgia card feel with the King thing, you know?
I like that. Yeah. Zach John King and
the Jokers.
Yeah, the Jokers. That's sick, dude.
The One-Eyed Jacks.
Yeah.
But no, man, it's super cool. And I personally, like, love country music. I love rock music. And the intersections... There's like some classic things where it's like the heavier rock that leans into country, but the indie rock is a little bit more delicate. And for me, like when I think back on the rock that I grew up in the 90s and then the 2000s, it was more like that indie leaning, more like storytelling vocalist stuff. Mm-hmm. And I think that's kind of like where your lane is. So it scratches such a good itch for me listening to your music.
Yeah.
And man, the new project. Why don't we talk about it?
Yeah.
Maybe like let's go song for song through it.
Absolutely.
Do we have the list?
I do, but it's over there.
Yeah.
I hope I remember it.
Yeah. I can pull it up if not.
Yeah. I think I don't know the exact order.
Yeah.
But I know we've got the focus track is going to be Lose You.
Yeah.
Which is I don't write a lot of love songs. I think if I don't write a gritty love song that I believe in, I just don't want to write one.
Yeah.
I think a lot of times love songs are like too perfect.
Yeah.
Like, love just doesn't seem to be that way.
Not always.
But, dude, I moved with my wife here 3 years ago to a sight unseen apartment off Charlotte Pike. It was terrible.
Sounds terrible.
Like, awful.
Yeah.
And I waited tables at 12:30 Club from, like 5 in the afternoon to, like, 3 in the morning to write during the day. Made little to no money. And she held it down for 3 years. And it was just, like, she saw me through the pit. And I was like, dang, like, you get to this point where things are kind of starting to work.
Yeah.
And it's like, I think she's owed some, like, some shout out,
yeah.
You know? And so Lose You is really about just what all I trade for her at this point. Like, she's given so much to me. It's what I would trade to her. And we just packaged it in a really beautiful, like, folk song that everybody can sing.
Yeah.
And it's gritty and it's tough, but it's also really relatable and it's singable. And the instrumentation is, like, my favorite thing ever. It's super acoustic leaning, lots of banjo, lots of pedal steel, the gang vocals.
Yeah, yeah.
So I love that one. I Deserve a Heartbreak is the one that had come out right before, about a month ago.
Yep.
And
Smash, by the way.
Thank you. Well, I love that. So that's probably my favorite song to play live right now. And it's pulling directly from all those indie rock influences. Mm-hmm. Like, I think I actually got referenced by my team after we put the song out. They were like, I think this is a Blink 182 lick.
Yeah.
Like the guitar part. And I think it is. I don't remember which song it is. And I was like, that adds up.
It's close enough.
Yeah, it's close enough. But that one's just owning up to my mistakes. I mean, I think for me, like I said, on this EP, I wanted the good and the bad, right? Like me the whole way through. So you get the mistakes and the good things. And so for me, like, there's a lot of relationships I've been in that I'm just not proud of at all. Mm-hmm. And if I kind of got what I had coming for me, it would be pretty rough. Like, if I got what I dished out in relationships, it'd be tough. So that song is a flipped hook in a weird way of, like, I Deserve a Heartbreak, because if, you know, if it all shook out evenly, it would be rough.
Yeah.
So we packaged that one in a really sick indie rock song, and I just love it live. It's so much fun to play. We've got the Cold Shoulder.
Yeah.
So Cold Shoulder is, like, one that we knew wasn't going to be, like, a smash or whatever. But it was one of those where it's like, I remember a girl I thought I was going to marry back in my hometown. I ended the relationship, like, on the coldest night of the year. And I don't remember why I did it, but it was like a cold front coming through, and I did it in her driveway. Like, we were outside. And I remember it was a life-changing decision because it was, you know, it's going to be like staying in my hometown or moving away, whatever. And
been there.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of people have, and I think that's the wild thing about that type of story. But I was like, if we do this right, we got to paint this movie scene. So it's as specific as I've ever written. It's like exactly how it felt, how it smelled, how it looked in this really hard story to listen to. And it's just stripped, this acoustic and pedal steel and my voice. So I'm really proud of that one. And then we've got, let's see, I Deserve, Lose You, Cold Shoulder, Shouldn't Have To, She Shouldn't Have To, She Didn't Have To. There we go. She Didn't Have To is the one coming after the focus track. And that one is like a super gritty love song. Again, it was like knee deep in working at the restaurant.
Yeah.
And it was a Sunday morning. And
worst shifts, brunch shifts were worse.
It's tough, bro. And my girl wanted to go to church. And I was too hungover to go to church. And I remember sitting on the edge of the bed, just like, I hadn't had anything going on. I mean, I wasn't. No networking had gone on. I was just at rock bottom. And I was like, golly day, like I am really asking her to stick around here because I'm not doing anything. I'm not home. I'm not making any money. You know, I'm making mistakes at night. Like, this is tough. And that was just, she didn't have to, but she did. And it's one of those songs where it's like, she didn't have to stick around. And she did. And it's super, super raw, super real. And I'm really thankful for sticking around, because I think we've kind of made it to the other side in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
Really proud of that one. And then I see six, that's five. Hole in the Wall, I think, is the sixth one. Mm-hmm. And that one's just an awesome story. We wrote that song in 30 minutes. I wrote that with Abram Dean and Jimmy Robbins.
Mm-hmm.
And they pitched the song, and it was like, trying to fix this hole in my heart at this hole in the wall. I was like, done.
Yep.
Like, I go, like, that literally.
That sounds like a country song.
I was like, that's a country song. And it's also like, I love grungy dive bars. It's like my favorite places in town are like Dino's and places where
that's
it's
my
just,
hood.
Yes, yeah. It's like the tables need to be sticky and it needs to smell like cigarettes. Like, I don't want to go to a clean bar.
Mm.
And so that's just a classic country song. And it's got this big, sick guitar riff on the top of it. And it's just a blast to play live. And so, I think for me, like, you know, listen top down, it's like you get a piece of me in each one and my story in each one. And that was just the whole goal.
I love it.
Yeah.
It's a great introduction, but it's also like, seriously, every one of those songs that you say, like, we know this one's not going to be smashed. That's one of my favorite ones.
And heck yeah, man.
I think that's part of the thing, man, is just stuff that people can connect to. And I think this is a record that is easy to connect to.
Thank you.
Yeah.
That's the goal. I think that's in musical culture, like, the only thing worth anything now is accessibility and relatability.
Yeah.
And authenticity. Like, if you don't have those three, I think gone are the days of, like, produced pop star fake thing. I don't think people want it anymore. I think, like, something happened after COVID where people were like, yeah, the made up story stuff, we just don't dig.
Yeah.
We like the authentic stuff. And so we're trying to lean into that more.
There's a lot less artists that are like super mysterious.
Yeah.
Like Beyonce. What does she do? No idea. Yeah. But everyone else are like, I know what you're doing.
Church.
100.
Yeah.
I mean, Church still has that.
He's like one of the last ones.
Yeah.
And it's like, for that generation, it's perfect. Like, it works. But I think for the newer generation of artists trying to come up, you got to be careful. Because if you're not accessible enough for people to grab onto who you are, like, they're not going to care about your music. There's too much music coming out now for them to, like, wait for you to reveal yourself. It's like, come on, you know?
Yeah, I agree with that 100%. Why don't we talk about your team? Like, how did you get mixed up with Sony?
Man. Golly, it's a God thing, really. We were, the first year I was in town, I was like, how do I network? And my friend was like, you got to go to Key West.
Yeah.
And I was like, what's Key West? And they were like, it's a songwriting festival. And the whole pitch was networking.
Yeah.
And it's
drinking.
It's really just drinking.
Yeah, getting drunk. Yeah,
it wasn't networking. And so basically, like, I went down there. I was not playing around. I wasn't invited. There was none of that. I just bought my own. I spent my month's paycheck on a plane ticket.
So
I shared a bed with my buddy who let me stay in his room, and I just would walk around and just like sit at rounds and meet people. And most people were, you know, drunk and didn't want to say, hey, but there's a couple people that I met. And one of them was Nathan at Sony. And I mean, this is before anything was going on. I didn't have a song out, nothing. And I remember 2 weeks after Key West, for some reason he texted me and was like, hey, me and Lexi, my other A&R now, want to have breakfast with you. And I was like, oh, cool. So we sit down for breakfast.
Where'd y'all go?
We went to, oh, he's going to kill me if I forget.
Is it that place on 8th Avenue that everyone always goes to?
If you know the name, I bet I can tell you.
You went there recently with somebody.
Fenwick's?
No, it wasn't Fenwick's.
Everyone goes to Fenwick's.
I think it was actually First Watch. There's a First Watch over there.
That's solid.
And I remember just talking through stuff, and they were like, send us some demos. So I sent them a demo. And this is 2 years ago. I mean, literally 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. And I was like, okay. And so every month or so, they just check in. Like, hey, you got anything else? You got anything else? And time passes. Start putting out music. And, you know, as it starts picking up, y'all know how it works. Like, mm-hmm. if you get one offer or one meeting, everybody's got to meet with you, even if they don't care about you.
Yeah.
So we're doing all the meetings. We're doing, like, the coastals. We're doing here. And they were the only people that, when they were in this pitch, could actually say they were day ones. Because we got all kinds of meetings where, you know, the A&Rs are like, we've loved your stuff. And I'm like, y'all been the one free show, you know, at Whiskey Jam.
Yeah.
And they were the only people that were literally, I was like, y'all were there before I even had music out. And amongst other things, like we really loved what the Sony Nashville legacy is, like, you know, tried and true country music. And it's been great. I mean, we signed in October, and so it's just really getting started. And I'm trying to work as hard as I can. And I mean, I think the thing that people don't understand about labels is like, they're only going to work as hard as you do.
Yeah.
And they're also not this magic ticket.
No.
Like it's still up to you.
Yeah.
And it's always going to be up to you.
Yeah.
And I think so, not letting it be like this finish line moment. It's a starting line moment.
Yeah.
And not counting on much. And it's not that you should be hopeless about a deal or anything. Like, it's great. Mm-hmm. There's so many perks.
Right.
But it's still in your court to make it work. And so we're just working hard as we can. So
that's what it's about, man. Yeah. And that's like the thing you see is they want you to know where you want to go.
100.
And if you want help, they would love for you to ask for it.
Yes.
They're a resource for,
yes.
Hey, I need something. What do you need? Or like, what do you want?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It's just, they can open doors that you would have a hard time opening yourself.
It's like being accepted into a good school,
yeah,
a good college. It's
100.
Like, if you don't go to class, you're not going to learn anything.
Yeah.
Well, and it's also like...
And it's also expensive.
It's also expensive. You get a lot of debt. Yeah. No, it's funny, though, because it's like learning... I think that's the weirdest thing. The weirdest shift is I'm now like learning how to run a business.
Yeah.
You're the CEO.
Yeah. It's and so like the first piece of advice I got that was super helpful is like in these label meetings, you walk in with a plan. They want to hear what you want to do. Yep. And it's not sitting down and going, okay, what do y'all have? It's like, no, that's not being a good leader. Like,
yeah,
a good leader comes in with a vision, and that vision can change,
yep,
you know, and the team can assist in helping with that. But, like, at the end of the day, like, I'm learning how to, like, cast the vision forward, and I've got a team behind me to do yep it with me. And, yeah, I think that's the move.
It's powerful, man. Having other people that believe in you pointing in the same direction is so powerful.
Absolutely.
You know?
Absolutely.
And it lets you craft your vision and help that execute it
for sure,
you know,
and it takes stuff off your plate so you can focus on writing songs and
yes
being at home with your wife.
Yes. Yeah. Well, it's amazing how quickly that part gets like lost. Yeah. The songwriting part.
Yeah.
You like you start it all started with songwriting. Mm-hmm. And then it's like it becomes the lowest part of the totem pole and you're like, well, why is that happening? You know, it's like shows and other meetings and stuff, da, 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 da. It's like, well, it all starts with a song.
Well, and that's the crazy thing, because the song's really what ends up making the people be there, but yes, it doesn't make any money till it's out, you know. So it's like
100.
Yeah. So it's like, when are we gonna have time to do the stuff that's not currently making us money when we have stuff that's currently
yes
trying to make us money so that we
100
can fix the whole thing?
Yeah. And you've seen where it's like you can push as hard as you want for socials and da 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 da, but if you don't have a song, mm-hmm, nobody's gonna care.
No.
And it's the opposite too. You can have a song and yes it does more heavy lifting for you than years of other stuff. It's yes just you have to have the song.
Yeah.
And if it works on socials without the music, then you're just an influencer.
100. Yeah. And there's nothing wrong with that, but like you're not gonna make a living being a touring musician.
You got to convert that into tickets,
right?
Yeah.
That takes music.
Tall order. Yeah.
It's a very interesting thing too, like now getting to see how it all works, but at the end of the day, it's still like you said, it's the song that breaks through.
Yes.
You know, it's like you hear a song like Wanna Be Cowboy and you're like, oh fuck, you know. And then everybody's head turns,
yeah,
and they're like, oh, what have I been missing?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Well, that's part of being an artist.
Yeah.
You know?
And our goal is for every song we put out
to hit like that.
Like, we want Lose You to be that next song where yes people are like, oh, that's the one. It's like, yep, if we can do that every release, you know, we might not have this, like, immediate viral moment, but if you do that 15 times,
yeah,
you build this grassroots thing.
Yep.
And, like, that's something that was really encouraging on our EP show. I didn't know if anybody... you know, show up, and we sold it out in 5 minutes.
So where was it?
You know, it's at Cannery. And,
oh, hell
and
yeah.
I was like, this is crazy. And I thought it was a glitch. I was like, did we post the tickets? They're like, yeah, we posted the tickets. And, you know, that's Nashville.
Yeah.
It's a little easier to sell tickets in Nashville. We haven't tried it outside of Nashville. So
I was going to say, you're in Crexer. It's hard to sell tickets in Nashville.
Fair enough.
Easier for you, maybe.
Yeah. No, I'm not going to get ahead of myself, but it's cool to know that, like, if you are intentional with what you have, I think you can build a sustainable fan base,
mm-hmm,
and not maybe getting the cart before the horse and like priorities. Like, priority is still the fans.
Yeah.
Like, fans are everything, and you live and die by the fact that are people fans of you or are they just listening to your song?
Right.
There's a very big difference in sustainability.
Yes.
Like, you don't get your Eric Churches with 20 plus year careers without fans.
Yes.
Even if you had the hit. And y'all have seen it. There's plenty of people with hits that don't have lifelong fans.
Yeah.
You know, that's what I want. I want lifelong fans.
Yeah. It was always crazy, like, seeing some just smash of a song on the radio. Mm-hmm. Everybody loves it. And then you go to a show and there's 40 people there. And you're like, whoa.
Yep.
That's crazy.
It's a wild thought.
Yeah. Because the song can have people that love it, but they're not fans.
Yep.
And then some people, they have their artist tattoos, you know?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. So we had Aaron Tannenbaum on, Luke's booking agent, and we talked about that. What's the difference? What, you know, a big song, ticket sales, sometimes not, and he's like, I don't know. It's like some secret thing, I guess.
Yeah.
Do you think it's like the authenticity between the song and the artist? Because, like, I think we could, anybody in Nashville, there's writers talented enough where if you were like, I want a hit, a radio hit, somebody in this town's going to write it.
Or they already got one. Yeah.
But, like, that doesn't transition a lot of times to, like, people connecting with you, like, as an artist. And I wonder, with people like Luke, they've done both.
Mm-hmm.
They have a smash song, But there's like this immediate recognition of like, oh, this is him. Mm-hmm. There's nothing like, there's no smoke and mirrors here. This is like authentically him. And I wonder if you start that early enough,
yeah,
and you don't compromise it, like at the beginning of your career, you don't sell out.
Yeah.
If you want to use that word, I think that's when you start. It may take longer.
Yeah.
Like I look at Stephen Wilson Jr., who like just hit 1 million followers, like, or 1 million listeners.
Spotify, yeah.
This year.
Yeah.
And dude's selling like mad.
Yeah.
And it's because he just brick by brick did it the right way. His songs are unbelievable.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
It's authentically 100% him.
Yep.
And it doesn't matter. The rest doesn't matter.
No. Nope.
Because he's going to have a 20 plus year career.
Yep.
Super unique voice. Yes. Super unique look. Great songs. Yes. He's got everything.
Yeah.
It's incredible.
And that's, I remember Matt had him on the podcast early, and my buddy Mitch Wallace being like, dude, this guy, you have to see this guy. You know, and yeah. I didn't actually go with him when they went, and I feel so bad that I didn't, because like,
yeah,
he's just, even his online performances of him acoustic, yeah, you're just like, whoa.
I was so lucky. The first month I was in town, I love Brent Cobb.
Yeah.
And I went and saw, I was like, Brent Cobb's going to be at Live Oak, which is like an anomaly crazy of itself.
Yeah.
But it was Brent Cobb and Stephen Wilson.
Crazy.
And I got to see him. He played his gut string through mm-hmm. this pedal board.
Yeah.
At Live Oak, and just, I remember to this day, I remember what it made me feel. And I'd never heard of him.
Yeah.
You know, insane.
Those yeah. are the yeah. special moments.
Insane, man. Yeah.
Like, that's the crazy stuff.
100.
Yeah, my girlfriend just opened for him a weekend run.
Yeah.
And so I went out on the road with those boys. They're also super freaking nice people, too.
Love that.
But enough about him. Anyway.
I can talk about yeah, him. I
can talk about him for a while as well. But he's not on the pod right now.
There you go. There you go.
But man, so like you talked about touring. Is there intention in your live show as you're defining it for like, are you trying to like build in moments? Are you kind of letting the songs do the work? Are you trying to craft that like live experience? Like what's that look like right now for you?
Yeah, I think we're trying to craft that with what tools we have. So yeah. like right now we're in support slots.
Yeah, yeah.
So we're trying to figure out how to put the best live experience we can in 25 minutes or yeah. 30 minutes of a set.
Yeah.
And so a lot of that is balancing like talking points and musical moments and flexing the band. Like if people feel something, like the best advice I got is like country music fans want to, they care how they feel.
Yeah.
They might not remember the song they heard. They might not remember where they were, but they remember how they feel. So I think we're trying to cultivate a feeling.
That's cool.
And so I think a lot of that is like, yeah, it's talking points. It's introducing who I am pretty quickly and early so people feel like they connect with me on stage. But I do think our songs do that already. Like, I think a lot of that heavy lifting is done by the songwriting because I write songs, like, directly from my experiences.
Yeah.
So there's no disconnect with, like, what I'm singing and who I am.
Yeah.
And I think so a lot of that is, like, already done with the song.
That's cool. Yeah. It's always so interesting. And, you know, coming from the indie like world, what do you feel kind of, is there anything that was kind of like a cheat code for you with that in terms of like live shows or even musically that you think is kind of like giving you a leg up,
like taking stuff from rock bands and bring it over to the country world kind of thing? Or
dang, that's such a good question. There's a couple things that come to mind. I think there's not enough guitar hooks in country music.
Yeah.
Dude, hell yeah. And riffs. Let's go with riffs.
Speaking of the choir, I think you look at some of the biggest smashes of the last 5 years in country, and a lot of them have licks.
Yeah.
And indie rock is all licks. Like some of the time, sometimes the hook is the guitar.
Yeah.
So I think a lot of that is kind of important on our end, is putting some instrumental hook in a song that's like, even before you hear the melody, you're hearing something else. So that's cheat code that that's I learned from indie rock. And then, dude, I think the other one is just like cutting my teeth on bad shows. Like I played so many, and I played good shows too, but I played so many bad shows in terrible venues with no one there for years that you get this like, you almost get an invincibility complex, which you need, especially in support slots, because nobody cares who you are when you're supporting. They want you to tell them who they are or who you are. And so I think that's my cheat code too. It's like I played so many. My goal is to get up there and to tell you who I am as quickly as possible and as genuinely as possible. And if you don't like it, like I don't care.
Yeah.
That's kind of where that thick skin maybe is the better word to use. Like I've grown very thick skin from doing it over and over and over again. And then when the good shows happen, you're just so grateful for them.
Yeah.
You know, the humility of that is beautiful.
Well, it sounds like you're touring with a lot of cool folks. So
they're the best.
Probably, obviously your band, but also all the folks you're opening for. So you're probably not playing a lot of bad shows anymore these days.
Praise God, I'm not. And they've been, all of the acts we've opened with so far have just been
the homies.
Such an amazing time and teams. Their teams are incredible. Everybody. Vincent's team, Nate's team, Dylan's team, Connor's team.
And I'm sure you're learning stuff from each artist, different things.
All of them.
They all do things different.
Yep. Learning what I, like, it's just each night is like a little nugget to take away and put in the bank and be like, all right, we can do that better.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I learned, each night you learn something different.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
If in terms of your live show, is there any like artists that you've heavily drawn inspiration from, regardless of genre, or like anything where you're like, I took a little bit of this from this thing? Anyone in particular, artist wise?
Man, I grew up just enthralled with Bruce Springsteen's live shows.
Yeah,
I've never seen him live. I've watched YouTube videos and documentaries and stuff. There's something just intoxicating about. You can see on stage, like, he's pouring out everything from him onto the crowd. Like, literally just sweat and just, he's feeling every note. And I'm like, I don't love when you watch a performance and that doesn't happen. Yeah. So, like, I want you to viscerally see that, like, I'm all in this, you know? And so that's been a big one. Like, early Springsteen, dude.
Yeah.
It's like neck veins popping and, like, sweat dripping and, like, passion, you know. Yeah. I want to be passionate, so I pull a lot from them. I love, to this day, Kings of Leon's like still my favorite band. Mm-hmm. And there's like this cool factor to them that, again, like, we're not trying to be inauthentic, right? Mm-hmm. But there's like also this, like, may sound vain, but like, I'm really particular about like what we wear on stage. Mm-hmm. And I want to make sure we look good. Mm-hmm. And like sound good. They're one of the best sounding live bands I've ever heard. Mm-hmm. So pulling from like the passion of Springsteen and the like look and sound of Leon, and like that polished, like not missing a beat, not missing a note. Everybody looks cool. Trying to pull, you know, somewhere in the middle of that is like what my live show is kind of ending up as.
That's sick. I can't wait to see it.
Yeah.
It's always funny to see how different bands dress too, even in the genre. You know, it's like, you know, with Luke, it's like no one's ever told me what to wear or anything. Like, it's never even brought up one time. The only time it's like if I wear a white shirt, everyone's like, nice white shirt, you know? And then like then you see like Morgan's guys, like they kind of have a uniform, you know? And then you look like Zach with Reed with Zach, he wears that huge suit, like the nudie suit.
Yeah.
So it's just like everyone has their own thing.
Yeah.
And it's like just another cool way of expressing yourself.
Yeah, it is. And I also want my guys to like feel as confident as they possibly can walking on stage. Yeah. So it's not like I don't have like a
dress code.
You're right. I just every night I'm just like, you wear what you feel most confident in and it's gonna be sick because you're gonna feel good. It's like the Deion Sanders thing. It's like look good, play good. Yeah. Like that's my philosophy.
I know kind of a funny story is doing radio shows back in the day when I was playing for Jana Kramer. And so, you know, it's like the day after the radio show, all the people that you played with are all at the airport with you. And so, you know, you're wearing sweatpants and a hoodie or whatever. And then all Frankie Ballard and all his guys are like with the fancy denim and the cuff and the boots. And they got like their mustaches waxed and all that. I'm like, damn, you guys are looking clean like for the airport. And they're like, yeah. And I told my buddy Billy, who played in that band. He's like, yeah, Frankie would have us dress the nines like all the time when we're out in public just because it was like the way he wanted to be represented.
Yeah. There's a way to do all of that. Yeah. I think it just depends on who you are and what your brand wants to be. And but I love it.
That's super cool.
Yeah.
Did you guys, like, one of the things that I thought was cool, like when I was at a label, was like branding meetings, like talking about that stuff with intention, you know, and that guise of that, just speaking it out loud, which is all from you and the thoughts that you've had forever.
Yeah.
But just speaking it out loud has some kind of power where it's like, okay, now I said it.
Yes.
I've been feeling it,
yes.
But now I said it, and now we're going to point towards it, which I think is super powerful.
No, we've worked hard on that. It wasn't like a conscious decision of like, this is what we're going to be. We just kind of always work towards something. And so my big thing, I think one time I brought up in a meeting, it was like Waffle House Southern.
Yeah.
And like, I remember what would I wear to Waffle House at like 3 a.m? Like if I was out already.
Yeah.
And it's like I wear a trucker hat and a flannel and boots and I cuff my jeans, you know, which is kind of a no-no in Texas and stuff. But like for me, that's what I do.
Yeah.
So like we've kind of built it around like where I came from. Like I wear a ton of my uncle gave me all this hand-me-down Mossy Oak camo. Like old school bottomland stuff, like great stuff. I wear that all the time.
Yeah.
And so I think it's like, it's always used stuff.
Yeah.
That's my favorite thing to do. It's like, I built a brand around like worn in, used, I don't know.
Vintage
work hard stuff. I don't like new stuff.
Yeah.
I don't like new guitars. I don't like new trucks. I don't like new clothes. And so that's sort of like my brand. And I think there's some authenticity in there where it's like, I ain't trying to show up in like a, I don't know, a freaking
2026 Ford F-350.
Yeah, and maybe one day, you know?
Yeah, definitely.
But like, it's not my vibe. I love old stuff and I don't buy a lot. Like I still drive the truck I had in high school.
Yeah.
And it's got a dent in the front from when I was working at 1230 Club and I pulled into the parking deck too wide and
oops,
I didn't change it.
Yeah.
It's just kind of who I am.
Dude, I think that's a super cool thing too. You're seeing like vintage apparel and stuff be heavily back in the scene, not just in Nashville, but around the country.
Yeah.
And I think that's super cool. For me too, it feels like
I got my hand-me-down boots on.
Yeah.
Shout out.
Heck yeah, man.
My buddy Brett's like, you want these? I'm like, hell yeah.
I love them.
Sick.
Like, I've worn these in.
Yeah.
I bought these. There you
go. Yeah.
These were the first boots. I told myself I was going to buy a pair of boots in my first cut in Nashville. Mm-hmm. And my buddy cut a song in March of 2023. Yeah, I bought my pair of Tecovas. Only ones I bought. I wear them every day.
Dude, there's nothing wrong with that.
Uh-uh.
Good pair of boots, especially if you can get them resold. Which you can,
absolutely.
You know? Man, well, what else do you got going on? You talked about touring.
Yeah.
Are you playing any festival dates or anything this year?
Yeah, we got some CMA Fest. It's going to be. I've never played CMA Fest. So
it's going to be sick.
It's going to be first year.
What do you know what stage you're on?
Yeah, we're on the, I believe we're on the Reverb stage.
Cool.
Whatever's outside Bridgestone.
Yeah, that one, that's right there.
The Reverb stage on Sunday at like 2, I think. Super pumped on that. Last year, I was just there as like a fan.
Hanging.
Yeah, so that'll be sick. And then, we've got Voices of America coming up.
Hell
we've got some one-offs. This year, it's funny, like the next year's summer will be like our festival season.
Yeah.
Because I didn't really have anything going on when they were pitching for festivals.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's fun to see it. Like, it's picking up, but it's picking up like for the fall.
That's cool.
So next summer will be the move.
But
the fall is packed. Like,
yeah.
We're with Dylan Scott, Gavin Adcock. We got a ton of stuff going on in the fall.
So cool.
And so much more music. Like, I already have, you know, the EP's done. It's coming out the 23rd. But like, I already have two more songs. Like,
so May 23rd?
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
So in 3 days.
3 days.
From the time I cut this. Dang.
Yep.
So it's going to be out when this drops.
It's
going to be out.
Congrats on the release.
Thank you. Slow Down. Oh, that's the song I forgot. It's not Hole in the Wall. It's Slow Down. Slow Down's on the EP.
Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah. Slow Down is the title track. I should have remembered that. No, Slow Down is the first song I cut signed to Sony, which is really cool. But yeah, that was one of those where it's just like, you ever have I live in a town small enough to like not be able to escape like associative memory.
Mm-hmm.
Like you pass things and it's like, oh my gosh, like I remember doing that thing here with that person and you can't get away.
Yeah.
So that the whole thing's about literally like not being able to escape memory. And it's just asking, it's like, hey, would you just take a second, like just chill out and quit bothering me, mm-hmm. that memory. So slow it on down. So it's Slow Down, Lose You, I Deserve a Heartbreak, She Didn't Have To, and Cold Shoulder. I think that's the EP. If I'm forgetting anything, y'all can go listen to it.
Well, man, it's been a blessing to get to sit down with you. I know we've chatted a little bit in passing at a couple of events, but it's been cool to hear a little bit more of your story, man.
Dude, thanks for having me, man.
Of course.
It's been a
blast. Appreciate it.
Yes, sir.
Well, guys, we thank you for listening to us. Make sure you follow Zach on the internet. Download the new EP.
Yes, sir.
And, great freaking music.
Thank you.
Mashing of two eclectic genres together, and it sounds so freaking organic, man. I love it.
Appreciate you, man. Thank you all so much.
All right. Well, I'm Nikki D.
Curdo's on, and we'll see you on the front row.